Welcome to the Mr. Vincent Podcast, episode 117. I'm your host, Emmanuel Vincent, and I hope everybody's week's off to a good start thus far. These playoffs have been quite exciting, these NBA playoffs, that is. A few good matchups that you don't necessarily see in the first round this early, but this is a great treat for basketball fans, so I'm enjoying every minute of it. Last night, me and the homie Daniel Daly did chop it up. We chopped it up during the Bucks Heat game. Had epic performance from Jimmy Buckets, one for the ages, definitely. We didn't get to talk about that on this pod as we were recording while it was going on, and obviously didn't get to talk about the Grizzlies Lakers game, LeBron's epic performance that he put on with the 20 rebound, 20 point game. First Laker to do that since Shaq in 2004, I believe. But we did touch on all the other series and what's transpiring thus far, what we expect to happen, and we also gave a little preview of a series that we think will be going down in the second round. So we can get into this pod right now. Here it is. So it's currently 9:32 p.m. and the Bucks and Heat game is on right now. Game four, Bucks currently up 11. So most people who hear this podcast will hear it tomorrow morning after this game's over, along with the Grizzlies Lakers game coming up next. Now, this series has been quite interesting, of course, due to Giannis's injury, missing three games, and hey, the Heat are capitalizing so far. What's your thought on this series so far? How it's transpired?
Basically, everything changed with Giannis being out, getting that back injury earlier in game one. And then, of course, that kind of offset with Tyler Hero also getting hurt. So it kind of opened the door for Miami a little bit, and they took advantage of that, and that's why they're up 2-1 right now. But Giannis decided to come back for game four. I heard there was reports that he could have came back for game three, but the Bucks rightfully so, even in my opinion. I thought they were right to hold him out because naturally they're the better basketball team. They should be able to at least get – they were able to get on the board, of course, with game two. Kind of matching Miami's little energized run there. But I think, of course, in this series, I think Jimmy Butler, of course, you got playoff Rondo, you got playoff Jimmy. As soon as the playoffs happen, Jimmy Butler just takes it up to another level. And he's really the only reason why Miami even had hope to be, like, even win a game in this series, in my opinion. Of course, you got some heroics from Duncan Robinson and stuff like that, but now that Giannis is back, I think it's going to get back to his regular scheduled programming. I think the Bucks are just more talented than Miami. And I think they're going to just – it should be over in six. I don't see Miami able to muster another game, especially with Giannis, the way he's playing. Currently has a triple-double.
Yeah, absolutely. Because like, I think we said the same sentiments about the Bucks elected to keep Giannis out so long. Because I said this morning in the group and sit and talk that, hey, listen, if this is a playoffs – I mean, rather, this is the finals – he would have came back earlier. He wouldn't have been three games in a row. But they think that they could at least, like, level up with Miami or at least be a level above them without Giannis. But now that it's, like, 2-1, hey, let's just bring him back and let's put this to bed. That's the whole mentality to me.
Absolutely, absolutely. I don't see them messing around too much. But it's like Miami's good enough to steal a game, right? Like, Miami's good enough to do those certain things where they can muster up a game. You don't want somebody to get hurt early in this playoffs like that, especially with Giannis falling down. You don't want Drew or anybody else to get hurt. It's like, let's put these guys away because Miami is just gritty enough to make it more difficult than it needs to be.
Exactly. Like, Miami's not your typical eighth seed or seventh seed, whatever they were. They're not your typical that typical seed because they play hard. I thought they would have matched up a lot better with Boston if they would have beat the Hawks in the play-in, but they got the luck of the card to play in Milwaukee first. And Jimmy Butler is basically a one-man band show on offense. They really don't have any other options outside of him. But for some reason, that culture is just so real and just so, like, embedded in their DNA that they could really, like, make it really rugged and tough. They can still two games out of a series. I guess anybody.
Like they're not going to be like Brooklyn, right? Where we knew Brooklyn had no shot in the dark, right? Like all the reports coming into that series, people were like, hey, Brooklyn could kind of do something. And it's like, we really didn't see it. We really didn't see that muster and gusto in those games there. But when Miami.
Hey, I thought Brooklyn could have won at least two games.
One of them. I remember one of them. I felt like they could have had a chance. The 102-97 game. So, I feel like they could have won that game. But it's like, that's the difference in my thinking, because it's like Miami's going to get a game. You know what I mean? Like Miami, like I feel like they're gonna play the right way. They're always going to play hard, of course. You got Coach Spo there. They're going to get a game. But now that they got that opportunity to get two games, they kind of made it a series, even though Milwaukee now back at full strength and kind of expect them to bow out gracefully, the Miami Heat. But I just feel like, again, what you're saying with that culture and that infrastructure, they're good enough to make it competitive, even when they shouldn't be in games they should not be in.
Absolutely, and it just sucks, man, because it's just weird to me how they're not able to like really attract like top level talent, because I just feel like at some point they just like exceed their I think they hit a wall where they're like they overachieved based on the talent they have on their team over the past few years. So I'm just wondering, like, why can't they attract like top stars? It's a great weather, not the biggest market, but nightlife's great out there. No state income tax. I would think it would be easy to get people to come play in Miami, but they made some bad decisions with the deals they made, especially with Kyle Lowry, obviously Duncan Robinson too. I think those moves have kind of hindered them.
I think the Kyle Lowry – well, Duncan Robinson has been off since the bubble, like I was saying. Like, he's been off, but he's been able to find some type of shooting this series. Kyle Lowry has been I don't want to say robbing the Miami Heat with a ski mask on going through the front door, but it's been pretty bad. And, like, even the acquisition of Kevin Love, who everybody thought was going to come in there guns blazing and be able to rejuvenate himself, that hasn't worked out really good either. And when you look at that roster, it's just like, yo, they're old. Kyle Lowry's 36 years old. Kevin Love's 34. Jimmy Butler's 33. Victor Oladipo, unfortunately, who got hurt, is 30 years old. Like, these guys are a little bit more older. And when you look at their youth outside Bam Adebayo, Tyler Herro, of course, is the youngest on the team. But when you look at that team, it's just like there's nobody really – playing outside themselves where you can see, hey, this is going to be the potential where we see this player going. Like, we kind of already expect Bam Adebayo to be where he is, right? Like, Tyler Herro, he's going to be a scorer off the bench, that type of energy booster, instant offense guy that you think, but there's nobody really there to raise their ceiling outside of Jimmy Butler. And that's the issue with them right now. And as you said, no state income tax, sunny weather. You're in Miami, you're in the South. What more could you want? And they just haven't been able to put those pieces together. And that's why they make those moves for Kyle Lowry all of a sudden. That's why they make those moves to sign Tyler Herro and Duncan Robinson to those type of extensions. And it just hasn't panned out for them.
Yeah. And as much as I love Jimmy, I don't think that he's like the main guy in a championship team. I think it's like a top 15, top 20 player. It was not bad at all. But I think that there's a certain limit you have with Jimmy Butler as your best player or your go-to guy. Now, obviously, the bubble was set the bubble aside, because he went crazy in there, took the Lakers to game six in the finals. But I just think that you have a certain cap with Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. And I'm a big Jimmy Butler fan. I always love the way he raises his game. I love his – he just rises to the occasion in those moments of big games and stuff like that. And you're right. People say that he's not a number one guy. Is he a super duper star? But he can win you games. He can help you out in that direction too. And I was kind of thinking, just looking down the line for them, I'm like, yo, is that a spot for Dame Lillard where him and Jimmy Butler in that type of culture could make a difference, like make an impact to that level that they need? And I was just looking down the road at that, like, yo, they need to be able to make something happen here, because I think this is the ceiling for this team. The East is a lot better. The Celtics are going to get better. The Knicks, we see what the Knicks are doing. Cleveland, all these other teams are passing Miami. Toronto can make a move and pass them. So it's like, it's not that Miami's kind of in a state of flux right now, even though they stay competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you're talking about Dame potentially that being a landing spot for Dame Dollar, but at the same time, I'm thinking, what do they have that Portland's going to want in Miami? Because they're obviously in a youth movement right now down in Portland, and the pieces they have wouldn't really follow their timeline, I think.
The only guy that they can probably offer up is Tyler Herro. That's the only person I think that would make that even worth anything, like just timeline-wise. Maybe I wouldn't trade Bam in that trade. Maybe you have to make that work, to make them go, okay, we can go a different direction. We got a younger core here. whatever the case may be, but it's just like that would be like Dame Lillard, his resume, his stature, his playing style, his big game ability. Like, you figured he would fit perfect in that culture, right? Like, out of all the players in the NBA, outside of Jimmy Butler, right, who has been able to fit there like a glove, like, you figured Dame and that organization would be able to figure it out and make something happen. But it's just like, they got to do something, Miami. Like, I don't know if they did anything with Kyle Lowry, because I don't think they traded. Did they trade with? Yes, I think they did trade with Toronto. So it's like, in that case, I don't know what their pick situation is, but it's like, they got to do something. They got to do something.
Facts. Yeah. I mean, Dame is definitely a Miami. He has Miami Heat DNA embedded in him, I think. That is Dame Lillard. He fits Heat culture perfectly. Mm-hmm. He'd be a great asset down there in Miami. And, you know, Dame's all about, you know, just playing ball. There doesn't seem to be distracted with off-the-court things. Just focus on winning. That's how I see Dame as. All right, so we can talk about the second series. Technically, big game four is going to be tonight. Grizzlies and Lakers. Interesting series so far. Now, I've seen you say in the group that you think that this would – now, correct me if I'm wrong. You said that this series wouldn't be close if the Grizzlies had everybody intact, including Brandon Clark, Steven Adams, and they held the John Morant, that it wouldn't be close? Or would you say that they would have won definitely?
Now, maybe I was a little overzealous because I was, like, just upset of the last game. But, again, like, even before the series, I was like, I think the Grizzlies can win this in six. And I just thought they would play faster. I thought they would be able to run those guys a little bit more. But, of course, the Lakers have gotten big contributions from other guys like Rui Hachimura, Austin Reeves, even D'Angelo Russell and Dennis Schroeder to a certain degree. So when you get that type of production from those guys, it's like, okay, that's happening. But I just believe that if they had Steven Adams, that changes the offense, that changes the rebounding game, that changes what they do defensively, that keeps Jaren Jackson Jr. out of foul trouble in certain situations. That keep Brandon Clark coming in off the bench. That gives you another reliable guy instead of having to rely on guys like Roddy and Almeida and Conchar and all these other guys that don't really get minutes for the Memphis Grizzlies like that. It would be another reliable body. And John Moran's hand injury, we saw, even though it was a little lax, and of course the Lakers were blowing him out, we saw him get, 45 points.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's any answer for that. And especially now that he's kind of battled through that hand injury a little bit. Like, we know he can take it up another level, you know, and I don't think they have an answer for that. So I just thought if with the front line, especially with those guys, I thought they would be able to make a difference. I thought they would be able to deter things, especially at the basket. And, I feel like Memphis is the better team. I feel like they had a chance. I still feel like they have a chance to win the series, but it's just like, Of course, everybody sees LeBron. Everybody sees AD. It's like, we all know you don't bet against LeBron in seven-game series. Your track record is not going to be the best for that. And with a guy like Anthony Davis playing the way he is, I think that changes everything for them, especially how he's playing. And he's been a little up and down, of course. But I think, again, I just think that with Memphis, if they had their guys, they would have probably won this in six. I still think they have an opportunity, but it's going to be tougher without that front line, especially with Jaws and injury.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like we talked about this before. I wasn't the most comfortable or confident, rather, coming into the series, because I just felt like that the pace that the Grizzlies could play at would just be a little bit too much for the Lakers over time and wear them out through the course of a seven-game series. But you are right. Mm-hmm. If Steven Adams was playing, that would definitely make a big difference, because we know AD doesn't really let the bang down low. And he'd be more timid. Not saying he's softening like that, but he'd think twice about trying to like go down there and try to score in the interior with Steven Adams guarding the paint, and probably settle more for like the step back fadeaways and everything. So that's my thing.
He'll be running into a wall.
Yeah, because honestly, I think everybody says that Steven Adams is like the strongest player in the NBA. Like they say, like the strongest guy in the league.
Like you'd be running into a wall every time, and we all know. That doesn't always bear well for Anthony Davis, but I just think highly of the Grizzlies. I like their swagger. I like them talking crap. I don't like Dylan Brooks getting ejected, but you know, when you look at that, I just feel like the one thing that the Memphis had was going to be the ability, their youthfulness. Like I think that was, because this is obviously you're facing LeBron, you're facing AD, who have miles on them, injuries, all that stuff. If you can just run those guys to death. you would have a better chance. And I feel like they should probably try to do that tonight against the Lakers.
Yeah, I would think that they would like make an emphasis on pushing the pace early on.
Mm-hmm.
If they want to have a realistic chance to win this game and potentially the series.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was gonna say yeah. So you talked about Dylan Brooks, getting ejected flagrant too for hitting LeBron in the groin. I know I'm kind of tired of all these ejections in the playoffs, man. At some point, we have to come to terms that basketball is a contact sport. Things happen. You cannot look at that and say that he intentionally hit LeBron in the groin. I don't see that. Just like I didn't see that Harden intentionally hit Royce O'Neal in the groin when he tried to create separation.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
I think ejections should happen if something is malicious. And then in those situations where it's a basketball move, motion, that type of thing, I don't think you should be ejected. I think you should probably get a flagrant. If that's the case, if that's what it warrants, a technical, something of that nature. But to sit there and have daily talk shows, us even talking about, hey, should this player be ejected or not? If it's not blatant, I don't think a person should be ejected. Like a swipe to the head, a punch to the back, something to that magnitude, I do not think they should be kicked out of the game. And it's unfortunate that even Dylan Brooks got kicked out of that game because it's like Memphis is already shorthanded as is. And to have that happen, even though they got back in that game the other night, it's like, as you said, we want to see the stars play. We want to see guys play. We don't want silly ejections like that. We don't want that in the game unless it's warranted.
Exactly. I mean, like for example, I know you saw today DeJounte Murray getting suspended for Game 5 in Boston because he got into a verbal conversation with the ref and then made contact with him. Now I think that right there warrants suspension. Warrants suspension. That's my
it's just the situation. The game is over. You're making contact with the ref. It's like, yeah, that's going a little bit too far. Even if it was like as minimal as you think it would be, you still bumped him. You still intentionally meant to do that. You know what I mean? Like,
being aggressive with him at the same time verbally. So
yeah, that's a no no. I think even Draymond Green knows that one. But you can't make contact with the refs. You can't do that.
Word. So the Lakers probably can pull this off now that I'm looking at it. As I said, the series that have been, what, we're three games in now to the series. Mm-hmm. The Lakers can really pull this off and get advance in the next round. But they're still not in the clear. They got a lot of work to do tonight. I think they still just got to, like, AD got to be dominant. Or at least have that dominant mentality for them to win the series. Because mm-hmm. he obviously has a favorable matchup with the bigs being out with Stephen Adams and Brandon Clark. And now that LeBron's in year 20, I think LeBron just wants to like somewhat coast and let AD take over the reins in terms of being like the primary offensive mm-hmm. player on the team.
Mm-hmm. And we saw that. Like we saw that with game one, right? When LeBron was basically letting Austin Reeves and Rui and all those guys, Dennis, really lead the charge there. I thought that was a good move by him to let those guys keep cooking. Like where we would have saw LeBron take the ball, methodically walking up the court, iso everybody, ask for a pick, kind of slow things down. It's like when those guys are going, let them go. So I think he's understanding, hey, I got to let these guys, one, build confidence, and two, I got to get a break. I got to save as much energy as I can for whatever rounds, however far we're going. So hopefully, for the Lakers standpoint, hopefully he continues to do that because it's like, at certain points, they're going to need LeBron to be LeBron, but it's like, if those guys are going and they're clicking, let them go. I think that's the best thing for LA.
Yeah, I thought LeBron, at this point, LeBron is just going to essentially, like, pick his spots and where to be aggressive and when to be a facilitator. And then if it calls on him to be to have that scorer's mentality, he's going to go out there and do that. He's not going to be baited into anything that someone like Dylan Brooks says. Man's been in the league for 20 years. He's seen it all. He knows all the teams and all the tricks. So he's going to play it cool.
Absolutely.
Facts. All right. So, yeah, let's take a quick break, and then we can touch on the remaining series in the first round. Mm-hmm. All right. So, yesterday was a great game between the Warriors and Kings. Obviously, game four, where Warriors won 126-125. Series is tied up 2-2. Honestly, I can't recall a more exciting first round matchup in the playoffs. This is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
It's an all-timer, I think.
Just from the standpoint, outside of Game 3 was the only one that was kind of gotten away out of the series. Game 1 was a classic with, of course, that setting in Sacramento. First game since 2006, I believe they said.
Yep.
To have that type of atmosphere, you've seen it. Like, I was talking to somebody. I'm like, yo, there was Mitch Richmond jerseys in the crowd. There was Peja Stojakovic, Mike Bibby, Mitch Richmond, Chris Webber jerseys. Like, that game mattered to that city because they haven't been there to the playoffs in so long. And to have that atmosphere and that type of game, and, of course, De'Aaron Fox and Malik Monk going on crazy. They've been going crazy the whole series. To just have that, and then, you know, of course, going down 2-0 early, and then having the Warriors kind of even up the series. It's like, at first we were like, hey, are the Warriors going to get swept here? Like, well, what's going to happen here? So to see the champs kind of respond and kick back like that, and especially with the game yesterday, Golden State winning by one, you're like, wow, this is outside of Game 3, this is a pick'em series right now.
Absolutely. I mean, Curry pulled a C-web and it almost came back to bite them.
Yeah, man.
But luckily they overcame that. I mean, I didn't really see anybody, Chris, other than Fox, for making that pass to Harrison Barnes for the last shot. Now Mike Brown probably could have drew something better, so either Fox or Malik Monk could have took the last shot. But, hey, mm-hmm. It is what it is.
And that,
Draymond came over to help. He kicked out. Great basketball.
I mean, at that point when he got jammed up with Curry and Green right there, that's pretty much the only play they had was to kick it to Harrison Barnes. And he got a good look at it, but it was like, as you said, I would have wanted something a little better there at the end of the game, a little bit more spacing, because Draymond was right there to help. Like, he was so close to it, like, especially Fox going to his left. I would have wanted Harrison Barnes a little more further down in the corner, maybe an earlier shot so you can get another chance at it, because Golden State was only up one. So I felt like they could have played that a little better, but for this young Kings team to come out there and do that, it's been impressive for them how they're able to battle, not be afraid on the road, get down at various points in time to make comebacks. So kudos to them. You know, this first round has already been a victory for the Kings. Of course, they have a chance to steal a game here and there, but we'll see how it goes, man. I'm impressed by their play. I'm impressed by Fox, Monk, Sabonis, all those guys for playing the way they are. And I'm impressed by Mike Brown, of course, because, you know, he always had those issues with offense in the past, and it's like, to see this team like lead the league in offense, led by Mike Brown, you know what I mean? Like, just to have that and just understand how modern offenses work, where that was a struggle point for him. Kudos to those guys for just competing against the champs, especially against the champs.
Yeah. Like, I was definitely, like you said, I was definitely impressed with the Kings' ability to, like, to, even though they're young, yeah, they made some mistakes. For the most part, they were relatively poised with the whole entire game. Like, they could have easily collapsed in that game, and that lead could have been way larger than it was. The fact that they really came out to the last shot in that environment at Game 4 in San Francisco, mm-hmm. I mean, it's not the Oracle, but still, you're on the road, hostile environment. I think they showed poised all throughout, and I was really impressed with them. That's a game that they easily could have won. I'm sure that they felt like they should have won it. It kind of seems like they've been outplaying the Warriors for the most part of this series. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Steph was just being Steph yesterday. Crazy efficient. It's going to be hard to beat the Warriors on any night when Steph's that efficient.
Yeah, like, and this is kind of like, ending the stigma against Steph Curry, right? Like, we always heard the stigma, oh, he's got carried, he didn't have a finals MVP. And we're seeing last year, he won the finals MVP, finally got that monkey off his back. And we're seeing it now. It's like, when he's basically willing his team, especially with the Warriors, how they've been struggling all season, especially on the road, there's been no questions about Steph Curry. There have been no questions about his toughness, his scoring ability, his level of play. And we even saw it in that game yesterday when he stopped Fox. Like, he got in front of Fox. He played good defense, forced him towards Draymond, forced a tough shot, jammed him up. Like, he's playing fantastic this series. Klay Thompson's having a little resurgence here. Andrew Wiggins has been playing well. So just to see, as I said, I thought this could have been a way to wake the Warriors up and to get play at least out of Klay Thompson, Andrew Wiggins. I think the Warriors are going to be all right, and we'll see what they can do. It's definitely a close series. But, yeah, man, I just this has been a fantastic series, and yeah, it's just been a great series so far.
Yeah, absolutely. Draymond was big yesterday. I mean, he came out early on he came off the bench yesterday because Kurt elected to make a change to have more offense out there to match up with them with the Kings. So came off the bench, hit a jumper, hit a three early on, and then he's pretty much abysmal after that shooting. Mm-hmm. But he made his stamp in the game, especially on defense and especially in the fourth quarter. That triple Sabonis and that block too was big time.
Oh man,
I believe that he was the Warriors were +8 with him on the court too as well. So I thought they played a relatively good game. You saw the true value of Draymond Green yesterday.
Absolutely, because that's the type of player he is. He's not gonna score 25 points. Like, that's not his thing. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to create offense by via passing, those dribble handoffs with Curry. He's going to make the defensive plays, the block on Sabonis, the strip on Sabonis. Like, those type of plays is what Draymond Green does. Like, anyone who questions his type of value, that's the same thing I say about Marcus Smart. Like, you're not going to sit there and look at the box score and think for them before they're scoring. They're going to make all the little plays, do all the dirty work, be the emotional leaders of the team, and Draymond Green has been that. Well, like, when people want to talk crap about Draymond Green, it's like, look no further than yesterday's game. You know what I mean? Like, he's able to do all the little things to make it work. And the Warriors desperately need him. And people always question, why do they put up with his crap? Why do they have to deal with Draymond Green? He punches teammates. He does all these things because more often than not, he's going to show up for your team. He's going to show up for your team.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I'm sure he probably felt like he let some of his teammates down, getting baited in by Sabonis and getting ejected. But they were able to win that game, and then he came back and provided that defensive intensity and that mentality that the Warriors need, and they were able to capitalize off that again. And even the series up 2-2 going back to Sacramento. Oh, Jordan Poole's playing really bad.
Yeah. Sorry, Jimmy Butler just went God mode just now.
I said it too, but I didn't want to interrupt the pod. But this is crazy right now.
Yeah, but Jordan Poole, and this is what this is the only question marks with the Warriors, right? Like, giving Jordan Poole all that money, the young guys aren't getting a lot of minutes. All these questions with the Warriors, it's like, yo, like, we can kind of see the cracks in the armor a little bit. Like, you can see where things could go bad. Like, Jordan Poole has a bad quarter. You're not getting that 20 points a game from him. You're not getting that much production from him. So to see that, it's a godsend that Andrew Wiggins showed up when he did, right? Like, Andrew Wiggins came back and is playing well. So, you know, you're getting that type of production from him and able to pick up the slack from those guys. But, again, outside of Steph, Clay, Draymond, and Wiggins, it's like you kind of need more than that. Vaughn Looney had a big game. He's playing well on the boards there and playing defense. But it's like, outside of that, it's like a lot of these guys that the Golden State Warriors kind of hitched their wagon to aren't really paying dividends. They're lucky that Steph Curry and these guys are playing well outside of that. But it's like, I can see where things go bad.
Yeah, I mean, like, Jordan Poole right now, what he's averaging so far, I haven't written down here. Poole's stats so far for this series, 14 points a game on 37% field goal shooting, 23% from three. That's atrocious for a guy who just got a $100 million contract.
There's one thing when you have a bad game. To have a bad series like this, it's like, damn, man. It's tough. That's tough.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think they're going to probably have to scale back his minutes, probably play GP the second more. For defensive purposes, because right now he's more of a minus than a plus when he's on the court.
Mm-hmm. They just got to find, and I think that's the one thing over these next, let's say this goes seven, the next three games, they're going to have to find somebody who can provide a little bit more production. You know, Jonathan Kuminga didn't get that much minutes the other day. Dante DiVincenzo seems to be the guy getting the most minutes out of those guys off the bench there. Maybe he can provide something there, but they have to find somebody that they can trust, because they trust 1, 2, 3, 4 guys right now. They're trusting four guys right now, and they're trying to get minutes to the other guys, but it's like they got to find something for that bench there to help them out. And Jordan Poole hasn't been able to do that. Maybe he can do that at some point. But it's not looking good for him right now.
Yeah, absolutely not. So who did you pick to win the series when it started?
I can't even remember. I think I picked the Warriors. I think I picked the Warriors. Or did I pick the Kings? Yeah, I think I picked the Warriors. Yeah, I went with championship experience and stuff like that. Yeah, I believe I picked the Warriors.
Yeah, I thought the Warriors would go to the finals, so I think I had to win in a six because I'm like, I don't know if they can really – would they allow it to get to game seven being a hostile environment that Sacramento is. So I thought that would have got over in six. But at the same time, now that it's 2-2, I can't see them winning four consecutive games in a row against this team.
I mean, they could have stole – easily a game. No, I'm talking about they could have stole game one. They were playing in game two, but it's like they could. I'm talking about from the Kings' perspective. They could have stole yesterday's game. You know what I mean? With a couple plays here and there, it's just like they could easily be 3-1. Like this is the thing we're saying when it's a toss up series, because it's like either of these teams can be up 3-1. The series could be over if the Warriors played like they did in game three. It's like any of these, like all these games are so up in the air, and I think that's what's made it so entertaining. Because it's like it's nothing but high octane offense, and I was surprised how, the defensive side of the ball for the Warriors at home is higher than when they're on the road. I think they're third defensively at home, and then on the road they're 28th, and then on the Kings they just don't play defense. So it's like I'm surprised when the Kings get stops defensively, and I'm surprised if the Kings. And again, we gotta see if the Warriors can win one on the road now. That's the thing about this series.
I forgot about, I saw earlier today that De'Aaron Fox fractured his finger on his shooting hand, and he listed a double for tomorrow.
Game five. Yeah. I saw that, and I'm like, damn. These injuries, man.
Yeah, I was saying, like, this is the worst. Like, all these injuries in the playoffs is just, it's just really, like, crushing my spirit, because this is about the best time of the year. No, seriously.
Yeah.
For a basketball fan, you got players sitting out, and injuries and everything. It's like, come on, man. This is whack.
You just want to try to, especially with the Kings. It's like, if De'Aaron Fox can't go, it's like, what options do they have? Like,
gonna have to be Malik Monk.
I want Sabonis to play a little stronger, more than he did yesterday. There was a couple rebounds the other day that he wasn't getting, and I'm like, yo, you gotta grab those, man.
Yeah.
Like when your team needs those type of rebounds and stuff like that, I'm like, he needs to grab those rebounds. Like, they cannot have anything soft there. Like, of course, they can't have any soft play inside against the Warriors with Kevon Looney, Draymond Green, and those guys. Like, you can't do that. Like, I feel like he could have grabbed a couple more possessions for them. But, all these injuries happening. Of course, across the board, it's like we had that enough in the regular season. We do not need any more of that, especially come playoff time. Like, so hopefully, knock on wood, guys are able to stay healthy throughout. Hopefully, De'Aaron Fox can give it a go. Hopefully, it's not as bad. Maybe he just, like, because I looked at it, it's like, it's probably like the Kobe injury, right? Like, just put something on it. that's what everybody's looking for. Like, yo, just wrap it. You'd be fine.
Yeah, man, I can't imagine him not playing. I'm sure if he can go, he's going to go. He's a gamer. Yeah. He's going to want to compete. And especially in his first playoff series, he doesn't want to let that stop him.
And out of all the people, he's been amazing. Like, he's been amazing. Like, he's really stepped on the stage and really led the Kings and really been the driving force for them even having a chance in the series. So, hopefully he can be 100%. That's all we hope. Because he's playing fantastic.
Hey, question for you. Who do you think? So, I would say right now, out of all the players in the 2017 draft, if I would rank them, I'd probably go with Tatum, Spider. But I'm a little conflicted between Bam and Fox. I would say, from what I've seen thus far for a substantial period of time, I would probably put Bam ahead of Fox. But this past season and this postseason, Fox got me rethinking that I might have to put a number third in from the 2017 draft. I might fix that soon.
Yeah, it's clear. Like, offensive players, guys that can score, they have a little bit more of effect on the game than a guy like Bam, who's kind of more, a little bit more, not as much of a scorer, a little bit more universal, more balanced player. Fox, like we saw this year, he has the clutch award. Like, there's a reason. Yeah. Like, guys that can get the ball in the fourth quarter make a difference. So, I got to go with Edge to Fox. But, yeah, I'll go Tatum. I'll go Mitchell. I'll probably go Fox, Bam. Lauri Markkanen's making a case to rise up the ranks as well. So
yeah, I probably got my five right now.
Yeah, yeah, most improved player this year. He just, I believe, he won the award tonight. So yeah, there's a lot of good players from that draft, but most those guys up there, especially Fox, really making a case because people were kind of out on him, and a lot of people have questioned the Halliburton trade, but he's put all that to rest. He's put all that to rest.
No, he definitely has. All right, so we can touch on the Knicks and Cavs series. Knicks, oh God, New York fans are insufferable right now. They get Aaron Rodgers today, and then obviously they're still relishing in the Knicks' victory yesterday against the Cavs, going up 3-1 after beating them 103-92. I'm kind of sick because I had the Cavs. I thought it was going to go like seven games. I picked the Cavs to win, but it's just crazy how they get outclassed, especially on the glass. I mean, they're getting out-rebounded by seven. They're getting out-rebounded by seven in the series. There was a difference, I believe, of 11 boards on Sunday. Oh, there were. Sorry, the Knicks were plus 14 of the boards on Sunday. I just think that the more physical team on the Knicks, they're more hungry. They wanted more. They're getting better guard play. They're just really being outclassed. Are the Cavs?
I picked Cleveland too, so I feel like an idiot right now. But every game that goes by, every play that goes by, Mark Cuban is somewhere punching a wall for letting go Jalen Brunson, right? Like, Jalen Brunson has been fantastic.
Letting him go and not getting anything in return at that.
He is just another blunder from the Dallas Mavericks. But he is playing fantastic. He's getting everything out of this series. He's methodically winning games for them, winning the series for them so far, outplaying Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland, which I didn't think was going to happen entering the series. But he is playing fantastic and has really been paying dividends. I've been impressed by the toughness of the Knicks, of course, kind of fitting their coach Tibbs to a glove right there. Julius Randle has been struggling, but I've been loving the play from Josh Hart. Mitchell Robinson battling on the boards. Like, these guys are really bringing their Timberlands to the series. Nothing's easy. Making it a grit and grind series, which I thought would have favored the Cavs a little bit more. But nope. New York Knicks, man. As you said, they're insufferable right now. Their fans are insufferable.
Oh, my God. Aren't the blue skies.
Stephen A. crazy, man. Stephen A. going crazy, man.
And the Cavs too. I think that their decision not to address the 3-and-D spot at the three, because they could have used it just in the wing play.
Understatement. Like, they knew fully well that Isaac Okoro was not the answer. Even if you think that you like him long term, you definitely needed some type of improvement shooting the ball, right? Like, you needed some type of shooting for this team. That was the one thing they needed. LeVert's more of a streaky scorer, not really a shooter like that. Losing Kevin Love. Kevin Love was let go, right? Like, he was released and went to Miami. They didn't get anything in that type of exchange there. I would have probably tried to trade for a shooter or something like that. They could have been in play for Josh Hart, right? They could have been in play for Jerry Crowder and opted not to. And I think that was that's probably a big reason why they're losing in this series. They don't have that three and D wing guy to really control and shoot the ball for them. I don't think they even have one shooter on this team. You know what I mean? I mean, they did get Danny Green, but he's not, after that ACL injury, he hasn't really been 100%. So it's like, that's been the biggest blunder for Cleveland right now. And it's showing glaringly in this series.
Yeah, man, it's just crazy. I didn't think they'll be a class like this. I mean, I know Tibbs is a great coach, but at least on the defensive side of the ball, but they are just really like doing a number on them. And Donovan Mitchell was just atrocious yesterday, basically a no show in a pivotal game, just 11 points on 5-19 from the floor, 0-4 from 3-point range. It's kind of like deja vu all over again from last year. And he had to do a thing last year in the first round with Brunson.
Their play to, and it's funny that was pointed out, because like Jalen Brunson was playing in Dallas last year giving Utah problems, so it's like to see Jalen Brunson just continue to outplay Donovan Mitchell right now, it's like, it's looking rough for Donovan Mitchell, man. It's looking rough.
Absolutely. So do you think it ends on in game five, or you think we go back to Madison Square Garden for a game six?
I think Cleveland can extend it because it's like there's got to be a sense of pride there, right? Like, even though we feel like New York is the better team, New York is playing well. They're basically beating them in all facets. It's like at that point, it's like you got to play with pride, but it's just like I just don't see. I think the depth of New York, just those little extra two or three guys, is making a difference in this series, and it's really putting the wear and tear on. I'm surprised. I'm disappointed in the big play from Cleveland because it's like I thought they would have been able to win that matchup cleanly, and they just haven't, and that's been alarming, to say the least.
I guess that I don't want to be too harsh on Mobley because it's only his second year in the league, so maybe the light's just too bright for him just early on. But this would be a great learning experience if they're not able to, you know, overcome this and come back and take control of the series. Also, it's going to be a great learning experience that he can build off of.
I just think the physicality of the Knicks, Julius Randle, is going to put a shoulder into you. Mitchell Robinson is a big dude, and Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, even though I think they are better players than Mitchell Robinson, not so much Julius Randle. Julius Randle is better than those guys right now. But it's just like I thought they would have been able to play there and been able to have advantage, use their size a little bit more, deter a lot of things at the rim. It's like it just hasn't really been that for them.
Word. Exactly. All right, so we could do one and move on to another series in the East. Hey, your Celtics up 3-1 now against the Hawks after their victory last night. Tatum and Brown with 31 points apiece. This series, I called it from the beginning. I thought they're gonna have this series is gonna go should be four a sweep, if not a gentleman sweep. They may have a Magic City game, and they had that in game three. So they lost and had a valid excuse, but they handled their business last night. And now we talked about it earlier. Murray spent it for game five. I don't think he really made a difference anyways. Back in Boston, they got a little momentum. They know what's going on. They seen Philly clinch their second round berth on Saturday. Mm-hmm. They're going to play around much longer. So this series is essentially a wash.
Of course, we talked about the Magic City game. After game three, I wanted it to be a sweep. I'm like, yo, you guys can't go to Magic City, man. No King of Diamonds, no Magic City, no nightlife. I want you guys to go straight to the hotel. And that's what we saw in game four, even though the game was close at the end there. We saw Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, what they're able to bring to the table. Marcus Smart played a fantastic game, but I was just more impressed by Robert Williams. Every game that he plays healthy, every game that he's dominant like that, grabbing the boards, it's the one thing that separates the Celtics, right? Like, I think that's the one thing that can really help them make that run where he wasn't healthy all last season during the playoffs. He was basically playing on one leg. So to see him out there being physical, being a man on the boards like that, that's the one thing I'm taking away from the series. It's like, hey, can we get him right and get him going and get him to be dominant again like how he was before the injury last year?
Yeah, like he's really doing an amazing job this series so far. I know Boston fans are praying, hey, look, if he can just maintain his health throughout the course of these playoffs, that would only lead to good things for us. I agree. He's essentially like to win a championship, they need him to be there and be available when it matters most.
Because if he's not, then we're relying on guys like Luke Kornet, Mike Muscala, Grant Williams. And not to say Grant Williams isn't a good player. I think he played well the first part of the year and then kind of fell off a little bit. I still think he has something to prove there, but it's like without Robert Williams' length and size and rim running, like the same story with him. It's like if he's healthy, it makes all the difference from the Celtics on both ends because he's a good passer, he's a good rebounder. I think I'm gonna give him a little bit more IQ than people probably would give him credit for. So to be that impactful on both sides like that, I think that's the one thing for the Celtics. Hopefully, they can get him through this series.
Yeah, absolutely. On the Atlanta side, now this year, I knew that Trey had a good game last night, but it's really, really, really tough for Trey. Because the fact that with all this length and athleticism that the Boston has on the wings, they're going to make life difficult for him. He's not really been that good. He's shooting like 31% from three, 42% from the field. for 26 points. Mm-hmm. But these points are, this has really been the story of Trey's career, particularly from three. A lot of people think of him like he's this Steph Curry type of player, like from beyond the arc, where that's really not the case. He's just not Steph, not even in the same atmosphere, to be honest.
No. He's a willing Steph Curry impersonator. Like, he's willing to shoot those long-range threes. He's willing to take those amount of threes. But percentage-wise, especially at his size, he just doesn't have – it's just not the same thing. I don't think he has the strength as yet. I don't think he's worked on that part of his body as yet. Like, we've seen Steph, like, battle and work on his legs and work on his body to the point where Steph actually has shoulders now, right? And that took years to develop, right? So I think that's the one thing Trae Young is going to have to do. He's going to have to put in the offseason where he's actually building his body and getting ready. Because it's like these guys, like this series, you're switching into Marcus Smart. You're switching into Derek White. You're switching into Malcolm Brogdon. And then if you switch a big onto you, you're switching onto Al Horford, who he took advantage of game three but wasn't able to take advantage of game four. It's like you're going to get these guys that you're going to have to try to use your body and use your strength to get by. And it's not easy because Marcus Smart is strong, Derek White is strong, Malcolm Brogdon. It's like this type of series is not good for him. You know what I mean? And then you look around, it's like you got to face these other guys who are a little bit stronger than you. So I think that's the one thing he has to try to figure out. Like, we know he can get to the line. We know he can pass. But it seems like he gets a little fatigued at times and takes bad shots. And his shot selection is not the best at times as well. So it's like, I think that's the one thing he needs to work on is his body.
Yeah, so like this would be two consecutive subpar performances in the first round for Trae Young. I think that this is going to lead a lot of people to question as to whether or not can he really be a cornerstone player for a franchise? Can you really rely on him and build around him to be a legit championship contender? And I would think so far it has to be no.
Good play. I mean, he's a good player. I mean, I think that he can – there's some upside there. Of course, I don't think he's ever going to do anything on the defensive end. It's just not going to be there. But offensively, you want a guy that can score like that, that can get to the line, that can create for others. Like, he is able to do that. So, I mean, there is something there. Do I think he can be the number one guy? I mean, people were questioning if Steph can be the number one guy, and he put those rumors to bed, right? So, I mean, it's not all doom and gloom, right? It's not all doom and gloom.
Yeah, but he got I think he'll have to do a lot to like get to that point where Steph is at being a number one guy.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not saying he is Steph, but I mean, just as a guy that's essentially maybe a combo guard, you know, can a combo guard be that type of guy for your team? Like, we've seen Steph do that. There's other guys in the league that we've seen do that. So it's like, can Trae Young get to that level? I don't know. I don't think he's Steph Curry level, but I mean, he does have in this league is a scoring league, and he's able to score, so he has that on his side.
Facts. All right. So let me ask you this question: since we pretty much know it's going to be Boston and Philly next round, what do you think? Because I don't think I see a lot of people who have faith that that Philly can beat Boston the next round, and I just don't see it. I don't know what I'm not seeing that other people are seeing. But I really think that that's a bad matchup for Philly, primarily because the fact that the Boston can go five out and force Embiid away from the basket and move that ball around, even push it in transition and wear him down as the series goes along. Because we all know that while Embiid is dominant, he's going to be the MVP of the season. While he's not really in the best shape, not tip top at least, and I think that will play a factor in next series.
Boston has had Philly's number for a long time now. It's been the past couple of seasons. Like, our wings give him trouble. Brown and Tatum give him trouble. Joel Embiid is a little banged up with a bad back, sprained knee. So it's like he's not going to be 100%, and it's really going to be come back to James Harden, right? Like, we've all been waiting to see if James Harden can take it up a level, be that guy, not flame out. And he's going to be called upon to be that guy in this series, right? Like, he's going to be called upon to go up against Marcus Smart, navigate through Malcolm Brogdon and Derek White, take those switches, be able to get to the line and stuff like that, and really try to help.
But at this point in his career, that may be too much to ask for him. Because we know he's not the same part of an old. He's not the same James.
I understand people saying that, but it's like there's really no excuses right now, right? It's like he's not 38 and Chris Paul, right? Like, we see Chris Paul break down. Like, he's not that. Like, so it's like, well, how many opportunities are you going to look to be that guy, right? Like, you wanted to be the guy in Houston. It didn't work out. You had some injuries there, the hamstring injury that was nagging him. We see you go to Brooklyn. You didn't want to stay there. It's like you've been axing out of every situation. You've been paid max dollars. You want a max contract. It's time to show up, man. Like, there's no out for James Harden right now. Yeah, like, Joel Embiid is hurt, but it's like, yo, they didn't bring you to Philly just to be Ben Simmons, right? Like, you're supposed to be that guy.
I'm making excuses for him. I'm just being
real. No, because, I mean, people keep asking that question, like that's the question, like, when's he going to show up? And it's like, he kind of has to show up, right? Because it's like
– he has to. I agree.
Like, Tyrese Maxey can't keep being that guy. Like, I like Tyrese Maxey. I think he's improving a lot. But it's like, if he's the second best player on your team, you might be in trouble. Like, they need James Harden to be James Harden in this series. They need him to get to the line. They need him to be physical. They need him to knock down the shot. They need him to show up every game. They need him not to fade away. So,
and you really can't rely on Tobias Harris either. So, the second guy.
Hey, Tobias Harris has had a good first series, all right?
But this is a different piece of Boston.
Yeah, I think, again, looking at the series, I just think Boston has their number. Boston is one of the teams not afraid to single-cover Embiid, throw different looks at him, put a guy on him and say, hey, hold him for a little bit. They're not afraid to do that, go that route. So it's going to be, again, looking ahead for Philadelphia, it's like, who's going to be that other guys that step up? You need Tobias Harris. You need Tyrese Maxey. Is that going to be enough against Boston? I'm not sure. And then you start looking at their bench, P.J. Tucker, although as a willing participant, he is on that end, on the defensive end. It's like, offensively, he gives you nothing. Jalen McDaniels is an unknown. George Niang is an unknown. Shake Milton has been up and down. Like, he hasn't been really in the rotation this year. Are you really going to look at Montrezl Harrell? No. So it's like, it's really going to have to be the top guys for Philadelphia that step up and try to give them a chance in the series. But yeah, I think they're still missing a piece. I don't think Philly's there yet.
Absolutely. I think that Boston's length, the activity on defense is going to be too much for guys like Maxey. I think Harden at this point of his career. And Embiid just going to get worn down essentially as the series goes along because Boston's ability to take away from the basket. And all that,
but I just don't think I just don't think they have any answers for Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. I just can't have any answers.
Yeah, but let's take one more quick break and then talk about the rest of the series. So we got the Wolves and Nuggets. Wolves avoided the sweep, getting the game for a victory last night. This series, I'm not really crazy about this series because it just feels like a supporting conclusion. The Nuggets are going to win. They're the better team. This is the best supporting cast Joker's had in the postseason in the last, 2 years? It's just the bubble, basically.
Yeah,
it's just the bubble. They're clicking on all cylinders, it looks like right now. They got caught sleeping last night. But I think they're going to win game 5 in Denver and close the series out. What's your thoughts on the series and how it's played out?
Well, just speaking about last night's game, I felt like Joker was the only one that showed up. I think he had 43 points on the night. So it's like, He was the only one, like, even watching the game, it's like, yo, he's the only one that really, like, gave a damn about the game. watching that game so far. But, I'm just going to speak for the Timberwolves because we know the Nuggets are the better team. We know they got a 2-time running MVP. Jamal Murray seemed to hit the form, really having the green light this series. Aaron Gordon has been playing fantastic, playing defense and really being solid and being that guy that Joker needs next to him. But I want to just speak about Minnesota. Anthony Edwards, Minnesota, whatever you're doing, whatever plan you have, throw everything else away and just build around Anthony Edwards. I've seen enough of Karl Anthony Towns. I'm out. I haven't been the biggest Cat fan. It's time. Like, we don't need to see more Karl Anthony Towns in the Minnesota Timberwolves uniform. You guys already made your bed with Rudy Gobert, so you guys are going to have to try to navigate that. But I've seen all I needed to see from Anthony Edwards. You know? I've seen everything that I needed to see.
I love Anthony Edwards' game. I love his mentality. I think he's great for the league. He had a bright future, but I just hate the fact that he's in Minnesota, man. We see how good them they just don't do superstars right. We see KG. We see Kevin Love. like they don't really put the necessary pieces around their superstar players to help them in their quest for the championship.
I mean, I just really don't need to see any more Karl Anthony Towns, man. I've seen enough. Like, I've seen people stick up for Karl Anthony Towns, make all these excuses for him. Of course, he's been out with this a year with a calf injury and stuff like that. But it's like, if you're supposed to be this guy that's dubbed the number one guy, talks like he's the number one guy, he's 27. You know what I mean? Like he's 27.
Yeah.
Like, when are you going to get it? Like I don't know, man. In every playoffs, it just seems like he's struggling. He gets smaller as the moments rise, and it's like the advantage that I think he has, he would be able to exploit it, like shooting the three, having Anthony Edwards draw everything, Mike Conley draw everything. Like, and I just haven't seen it from him, and it's very – I'm not a fan of Karl Anthony Towns, but as a person who looks at franchises, small market teams who invest all this money in this guy, it's like you're supposed to be that guy, and you're not. And it's becoming more abundantly clear every game that goes by that Anthony Edwards goes off and steps up. You know, like he fouled out last night, like in overtime. I don't know. I'm just not a fan of Karl Anthony Towns, man.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I've never been the biggest fan of Cat either. So I see where you're coming from. I mean, they got a young stud right now, and Edwards just like really like focus on him. So and then just,
Don't waste time like these other small market teams do and try to figure out, hey, can we make this work or what? No. No, just start building around Anthony Edwards now. 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 Don't waste no time. Now.
Thanks. Yeah, so, yeah, enough of that series, though. So the last series, we got Clippers and the Suns. And, man, listen, the Suns are so lucky they've gotten this gift with this. Playing a team that is the that just practices slow advancement as much as it does, and then the injury to PG, it's like, come on, like these guys are lucky because I think the Suns are really fortunate right now with Booker and KD like having them log in the minutes that they log in. They both logged over 40 minutes in the last game, game four. It's kind of crazy, especially KD, all the injuries he's had over the last couple of seasons and everything. You would think you want to be careful with him and monitor his minutes to some degree, but no, the 45 minutes, y'all gotta slow down. I know your bench is a little thin now. I'm guessing when Cameron Payne comes back from injury, he'll get a lot of minutes too and everything, but still, it's just it doesn't really look good. But it looks like they're about to walk away and advance to the second round to most likely play Denver. I'm just not too sold on the Suns, despite what I'm seeing in this first round playing against obviously depleted Clippers team.
I think that speaks a lot to the Suns giving up everything for Kevin Durant, right? They gave up a lot of their depth, and especially guys that both probably would have been playing 30 minutes for them, right? Like Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges. So you're losing all that production. I think people saw the points thing, and it's like, yo, you're missing defense. You're missing two rotational pieces. So to give up that, and that speaks to the depth of the Clippers, even without Paul George, without Kawhi Leonard now, it's like you still got Norman Powell, you still got Eric Gordon, Terrence Mann, Bones Highland. There's still multiple guys that, even though the Clippers are losing, if you have stretches where you put Kevin Durant on the bench for even like 5 minutes, right? Like he's been playing what? I'm looking at it now, 43, 44 minutes a game? So, like, even in those instances where you're sitting Devin Booker or Kevin Durant for 5 minutes, if you need him to get a breather here and there, like, the Clippers can overtake a game, right? Like, Russell Westbrook has been playing fantastic. Norman Powell has been playing fantastic. So you can get those guys hot. Those guys get hot. It's kind of difficult to stop them. You've seen those situations where guys can take over games like that. But, yeah, it just speaks to the Suns right now. It's like, and I was kind of not worried about the high minutes usage because I'm like, if you guys get the series over early, then, I mean, it's not really a problem. I think the next time they'll play is probably Sunday if they win this series. I think they play tomorrow. If they win this series tomorrow, I don't think they play again until Sunday. So it's like, that's 4 or 5 days off. You'll be all right. But now if the Clippers can even win one game, and I know it's going to be tough without Kawhi Leonard, it's going to be tough without Paul George, but if they can somehow sneak and win a game, that's the worst-case scenario for the Suns, right? Like, you do not want to have a dud against this team, playing with this Clippers team right now. You do not want to do that. You do not want to drop a game.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I thought their mentality should be like, let's get this over with. They're down. They're wounded. They're vulnerable right now. We can end the series right here and then rest up for the next series, which would be on the weekend.
And that's weird.
Hey, man, your man, the Brody. I have to put some respect on his name. I was over critically him being in the Lakers, but I knew it was more so because of the situation he was in. But hey, he's been balling this whole series. He's been all over the place. I believe he's leading the Clippers in every category on every traditional stat category.
Yep.
Points, rebounds, block, assists, steals. Doing a good job. Just being active, being everywhere. Like he's really like. I feel like he's been taking that criticism he's gotten from playing with the Lakers, taking that to heart. And using it as motivation on top of the motivation he already has, because he don't know how the rest of us is. So he's been doing a good job, and I hope that he stays with the Clippers past the playoffs. Nate, I hope he has a permanent home for there starting next season. I think it would be good to have him there for like a full season and have a full training camp with them guys. That would be beneficial for the Clippers.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Looking at that from that standpoint and what he's bringing so far in this series, it's like. Ever since he got traded there, it's like, yo, this is probably the best Russell Westbrook that we've seen probably since OKC his MVP year.
I kind of agree with that. Yeah, I think I do.
Yeah, like when you look at it, even those triple-double seasons, there was still room to be criticized and all this stuff. It's like, I can't criticize him in this series and how he's been playing with the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, he's been efficient. He's been engaged defensively, something that we haven't really seen. Like, we used to think of Russ as a stalwart defender, stealer. Getting in the passing lanes in the past couple seasons, it hasn't looked that way, right? So to see him come out with this energy and see that he still has it, and actually the Clippers do need him, right? Even before all the injuries and stuff like that, I think there was a need for Russ, right? And that was the difference as in the other teams where it was like, yo, can you fit here? And then we just try to force it to make it work. Whereas the Clippers kind of really needed that type of point guard. We saw them try with John Wall and other guys like that. So it's like, to see actually a need for Russ and actually get this type of production, that's encouraging to see as a Russell Westbrook fan, as a person who has always supported Russ in that situation of talking about how he plays the game and never cheats anybody. We're seeing the fruits of that labor, right? Like Russell Westbrook is playing an all-out effort. He's playing nearly 40 minutes a game at 34 years old, like numerous knee surgeries. Like he's playing fantastic. He's trying to guard Durant. He's trying to do this. He's trying to play the pass lane. He's shooting the three ball well, which you probably never would have thought of that. Like, he's shooting, what, 40% from three. So getting that type of production from Russ, and that's kind of infectious, right, where he's kind of like that one-man band, but he has these guys. Like, he has Norman Powell playing well, you know, and Eric Gordon. So he has these other guys that he tries to – he's trying to navigate how to make this a series, and if anybody can try to do that, it's Russell Westbrook.
Yeah, I agree, man. I think he's, like, really proving a lot of his doubters wrong, and the naysayers. All those people who was talking trash about him while he was playing for the team down the hall, he's making a good case for himself. I'm happy because it looked like he was going to be out of the league after the season, but I think he has a great chance to be in the Clipper uniform next season. I think that he should be deserving of that based on what he's provided in the short stint he has with them. Mm-hmm. All the injuries that they've had so far. All right, what's your thoughts on Kawhi Leonard missing these last two? Well, I think he's out. I think he's up in game five as well. That'll be three games in a row he's missed. Now, I mean, it just drives me crazy, man. Honestly, I kind of feel I honestly agree with Stephen A. for the most part about his on his commentary with Kawhi. Maybe he's a little bit too critical of Kawhi at some point, but at the same time, it's just like, man, like there's always something. It's like he's never available. Like a guy who's like obviously when healthy at an A game, a top 5-7 player in the league. I think that's fair to say. But it's just like it's hard to really judge him because he's never really available. He's always hurt. We either load managing or he's dealing with an injury, and it prohibits him from playing. And we us as basketball fans get robbed of seeing his greatness displayed on the court, and especially my fans down there in LA. I mean, if there's been any real Clippers fans outside of Bill Murray, but they get robbed because they don't get to see Kawhi Leonard play on a consistent basis.
They got Clipper Daryl. They got Clipper Daryl. It sucks because it's like you just think about all the other guys that got their careers taken away from injury. You got Derrick Rose. You got Penny Hardaway. You got Yao Ming. Who's another guy I was thinking about the other day? Brandon Roy. guys of that nature.
That hurt. Brandon Roy really hurt me.
Man. Yeah, who had to battle through injury and try to come back and stuff like that. So it's like, on that side of things with Kawhi Leonard, I definitely sympathize with that because it's like, yo, like, I don't think this is generally something that he's just trying to sit out and not play and not be there. I think load management has always been on terms of the team. Medical staff, hey, like, let's try to get you here. The way they look at NBA players, the advanced technology they have, they're like, hey, you're running high here, you're running low here. Let's try to sit you here. Let's try to get you in the game stretch here and see how you're doing. There's a lot of things that go into it that probably a lot of us don't even understand or can comprehend, right? So to see Kawhi Leonard be this type of player and see how great he was playing in game one, see how great he was playing in game two, and to see him just be like, yeah, I can't give it a go. It's like you're in the playoffs. The Clippers, like they invested so much money into this duo with Kawhi Leonard, Paul George, like they invested their future. And still have been throughout all that, been able to build a good team. Like, you know, if you looked at those two guys, if those guys were healthy, this would be a championship contending roster, right? Like, we wouldn't even have questions. Like, yo, if they're healthy, they're going to give everybody on a night-to-night basis a fucking problem. But to see Kawhi just keep starting up again and then going down, it's like, damn, are we ever going to get, like, a consistent – and that's funny because after the All-Star break, he was one of the best players in the league. Like, you couldn't – argue how Kawhi Leonard was playing, and then just to get to this point, it's like, damn. You know what I mean? Like, it's difficult to see. It sucks to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're talking about it like they essentially mortgaged their whole future just to get Paul George, but at the same time, they were getting Paul George and Kawhi and gave up SGA in the process. And we see how he bought up this year.
If
they can do a duo, they probably would have tried really hard to keep SGA.
That's Sam Presti in OKC, though. he knew what he wanted. He was like, nope, I need that guy. If I'm giving you Paul George and I'm losing Russell Westbrook and I'm losing all these pieces, like, nah, I need that guy. But, imagine SGA with this team right now. Like, whoo, that would be insane. And I love Russ, but SGA right now is a better player than him. And you paired him with Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, it's like, woo, that would have been tough, but it's like, it's tough, man. It's really tough to watch, and especially I'm a fan of Kawhi. I love his game. I love how methodical he is. I love how he gets after the defensive end. A guy that plays Kevin Durant well, one-on-one. So we're losing all of that, right, like when he's out. So and it sucks. It sucks to see the Clippers in that situation because they really try to give it a go where, you know, with the whole Donald Sterling type thing, he wasn't really trying to win. He wasn't really trying to put together a good team. And so to see them actually try to go for it and just come up short time and time again, that sucks.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I think the Clippers got to, like, start thinking about their future going forward. I don't really know the salary, the length of the contract, but I believe they get in the new arena in 2024-25 season in Inglewood. Mm-hmm. So you want to get a new arena, you're gonna need to put butts in the seats. You're gonna need a product to sell. You're probably gonna have to move up Kawhi at some point and start just building from the ground up.
Yeah. I mean, they can't do that. Like, it's like, as much as I think of them, that hey, would it be smart to rebuild and try to get some pieces? If anything, I think they're gonna sign those guys and then try to trade them if that's the case. If they needed to really do that. Because they gave up all their picks. They don't really have anything other than probably cap space to offer if that was the case. And it's like that can be a new ground for somebody who is trying to leave their spot. You know what I mean? Like a bunch of players out there that can change locations that we've seen all the time. Clippers could possibly be that destination as we always think about Miami. L.A. has a way of gardening players to their West Coast. So it's like, I can see potentially them being a free agent destination. If that was the case, if everything else failed, like if Paul George is gone, Kawhi is gone, and they really don't have their draft picks, they can at least rely on their cap space. And they do still have Ty Lue. So that's something that they can hang their hat on going forward.
I'll be the best coach in basketball, if not top two, top three, I would say. Right now, so, yeah, absolutely. That's pretty much it. Are you working on any new episodes for your pod?
Of course, going to continue to keep doing playoff basketball talk, keep going to that, giving an analyzation on that stuff. Ring takes, we took a little bit of a hiatus because wrestling was kind of getting down a little bit. That really opened up the door for us to talk about our GOAT debate. We're trying to do a GOAT bracket and put that together. I'm working on that.
GOAT wrestlers?
Greatest of all time. We kind of narrowed it down to 16 and of the modern era, right? Since like 1980 and trying to figure out who's the GOAT, greatest of all time from our eras and stuff like that. We know the Pedro Morales's and Bruno Sammartino's, Bob Backlund, all those guys in the past. It's like, we really didn't see those guys. So we're trying to keep it really where you see WWF grow and stuff like that. So we're trying to figure that out. We kind of trying to narrow it down. We're still trying to narrow it down. But we're going to be talking about that. Of course, wrestling is picking back up. The draft, the WWE draft is happening. So we're going to see what's happening with that and push on with that. But, of course, more basketball talk, more wrestling talk, and just keep pushing, man. It's a wild time right now.
That definitely is. Great time right now. So, honestly, how many episodes do you do a week of your podcast? I'm just curious.
Of my basketball, I try to do once or twice a week if it gets really going. Wrestling is usually once a week. That's usually happening on Wednesdays, Thursdays. But yeah, basketball, I try to do one or two a week, or at least one. At least on the weekend, I try to do one. Because I feel like Saturday, Sunday is a good break where you can kind of see, examine the week. Of course, during the regular season, it's kind of tough to do all that. So I kind of try to do once or twice a week and keep it like that. Try to do quick notes and stuff like that. So. Yeah, it's wild, man. It's wild, especially right now with everything going on.
All right, man. Well, yeah, keep up the good work, man. Well, so we're done. I appreciate you, my guy. We'll definitely chat in the group, SNT. You know how we do. And we'll talk throughout the course of the week as these playoffs roll on.
Sweet, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir, brother. Take care.
You too.
That is it for this episode. Thank you guys for your continued support and for checking out this pod. And if you're new, I hope you enjoyed this episode and also hope that you'll stick around for the journey. And if you haven't already, be sure to hit that subscribe button as this pod is available just about everywhere you listen to your favorite podcast at. Also, salute to the homie, Daniel Daly, for holding me down again. Appreciate you, my guy. And if you want to keep up with me on social media, Instagram, Twitter, at MrVincent13. And you can also like my Facebook fan page as well, Emmanuel Vincent. So that's all the time I have for now. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, you guys stay safe, stay blessed, enjoy the rest of your week. Till next time, take care.